Yeah, so what do you do when life happens is the question for the evening. Well, after tonight, you'll know once more, you get catalytic. Hi, I'm glad you're here with us tonight. I am Cheryl Hirsch-Kramer, your host. Delighted you made the choice to join us tonight for part two of our story about love miracles. By the time this evening is done, whether you're catching us live or via the archive, I hope you're going to have a new respect and a new appreciation for the possibilities that are available to all of us in life, the things that we can do that we don't think we can do. You know, the mothers who lift those huge cars off of their babies who are in trouble. How does that happen? It's love is what it is, and we're going to talk about love miracles tonight. I'm going to give you some ways to put this into use in your own life. Again, we're going to give you a little bit of homework. This is fun homework, and I'm going to tell you a story that goes along with the fun homework to hopefully inspire you to do this for yourself. And finally, we're going to talk about the 22 days, the program I have going on in the month of February. Yes, I finally got it posted. My friends at Eventbrite helped me get that posted today, and I hope you will join us for 22 days of exploration, for fun, for spiritual connection, for blessings, and for service to help all of us get through this winter in style and grace and joy. If you are Jonas Doubt, believe me, I hear you. I feel your pain. I'm kind of Jonas Doubt myself. I live in New Jersey. I did not get flooded. Thank God we did not get flooded where I live, but we had a fair amount of snow. I'm very blessed. I live in a neighborhood which is the most delightful people, and they shoveled me out. They form teams. They come and they take care of me. So I was shoveled out about three or four times on Saturday when the big snow was falling, and then they came and finished off the job on Sunday morning. Why does this happen? I've lived in this neighborhood for many, many years, and during the last few years, and this is how it happens in all of our lives, the more that we come from our heart, the more that we show vulnerability, the more that we are real with people, we tell them who we are, how we are, we appreciate them, we make them feel good, the more it comes back to us. And that's how I get my driveway and my walk shoveled out all the time by people who really care about me as I care about them. And if you don't have this in your life, again, I hope tonight will inspire you to open your heart to your neighbors, to open your heart to strangers, to take that chance, to ask for help, to be real, to be vulnerable, to be transparent. We're going to recap a little bit of the last show. And if you didn't listen, this would be the 12th of January 2016 edition of Catalytic Radio, where we talked about the dream that I had that love would bring my dog back from death. And then several months later, she was indeed diagnosed with terminal cancer. Went to the vet. Vet said she'd be dead in 6 weeks. She was not dead in 6 weeks. A month later, took her back for an examination. The vet could not find the tumor upon examination. I had two more years with her. She died this past June at age 16 and not of cancer, okay? So it is possible. We did not do chemo. We did not do radiation. We did not do surgery. We did a holistic program, and I put together a protocol that I call my love protocol that I believe did a lot to support her during her journey. So the brief recap is this. I had this dream in January of 2013 that Layla ran away from home. And I saw her with my mother, who had died several years earlier. I knew that meant that Layla had died. I cried when I saw her. I knew I wasn't going to be able to get her back, and I didn't want to lose her. Didn't think it was the right time for her to go. And I cried, and I cried. And I walked home, crying. And as I walked home, I suddenly felt some fur brushing against my leg, and it was Layla. And it was as real as anything. And I knew that that dream was significant. I didn't know how significant until 3 months later, I noticed her breathing was not good. She was 14 years old at that time. She'd been a healthy dog, and I noticed her breathing had gotten ragged. She appeared to be in a lot of discomfort. It looked like pain to me. And we were out for a walk. I heard her say to me, and I'm an animal communicator, so I usually can make connections with animals. She was a hard one for me to connect with. We were not close for the first years of our relationship. It may sound like we were always close. We weren't. It took her a long time to trust me, and it took me a long time to trust her back. So it took years before I would even see a smile from her. Eventually, we developed this beautiful bonding, but it took a long time for that to happen. So the first time I really got a clear message from her was, how many years? 8 years after she came into my life. And she said to me, "I've got a tumor. It's not your fault. I have just a few weeks more. Don't go to extreme means to save my life. Stay away from Jack. You may remember I talked about this the last time. Well, the I've got a tumor was diagnosed the next day. She had an enormous tumor that was wrapped around her spleen, probably her liver. I have the x-ray. I wish I could show it to you. If you read x-rays, you would look at this and say, oh, my God, because it's a huge, huge tumor. So she had the tumor. It was not my fault, meaning that when my last dog passed away, I knew it was my fault. And she wanted me to know that it was not that case. So that made me feel good to know that. When she said she just a few weeks more, at that time, we hadn't done anything. So it looked like she just had a few weeks more. So she was speaking the truth in that moment. Don't go to extreme means. Well, she was a 14-year-old dog at that point. I just could not, in good conscience, put her through surgery. I could not put her through chemo. I could not put her through radiation. Not to have her with me for another year. That is not the loving thing to do. I just couldn't do that to a senior dog. So when she said that to me, I did not do any of those things. It didn't feel right. Instead, we did a holistic support protocol to raise her immune system and to do what we could do. And then finally, stay away from Jack. This I didn't talk about last week, and this is really important. I've had a life, and perhaps you've had parts of this life, where you've run into a lot of people who said one thing and did another. Okay, I wouldn't necessarily call them liars. Sometimes they are. Many times it's people who say something and then forget that they said it, or don't take their word seriously, or do whatever they have to do to get whatever it is that they want. I'm trained in reading destiny cards. And I am a Jack in the destiny card system, and I'm going to talk about this more in 2 weeks, that I do read destiny cards, and it's a fabulous, fascinating system, and I think it really helps us explain why our lives are the way that they are. Well, I am a Jack. I'm a Jack of Diamonds as my birth card, and that means that as a Jack, I usually lie to myself more than anybody else. I don't like lying to people. It doesn't feel good to me, but I lie to myself about things I've done or shouldn't have done or people I've been involved with or shouldn't have been involved with. I have found many times the Jacks are the people who don't back up their words with actions. I'm not like that. If I say something, I'll do it. But the Jacks don't back up their words with actions. And I found, and maybe you found the same thing, if you hang around with people who don't back up their words with actions, you get hurt a lot. It hurts your heart. It hurts your immune system. It hurts your ability to trust. It hurts your ability to be fully present in your life. So stay away from Jack. Men, stay away from people who don't back up their words with actions. And I think that's great advice for all of us. I've done a better job of staying away from those people since that advice came into my life. I knew it wasn't good to be around those people. I didn't understand how deadly it can be. So that's when I got that piece of information. So stay away from Jack. The vet looked at the x-ray. The vet said she has 6 weeks to live. She said we can do some nutritional things. We can change her diet. So I started cooking for her. She recommended some supplements. She said, no more dog food. You're going to cook. So that was fine with me. She gave me a diet to prepare for her. And she's a homeopathic vet. And I thought she was going to give a remedy. It made sense to give a remedy. To me, it did anyhow. And she says, no, I don't see a reason to give a remedy. She's not a, you know, it doesn't, there's nothing here that indicates a remedy to me. Well, here's where I started breaking away from my vet, whom I love. She's a wonderful vet and a wonderful person. But I knew if I didn't get a remedy, I'd be failing Layla. I knew she needed a remedy in that moment. A friend of mine is a certified homeopath. And she said, well, what remedy is she on? And I said, well, she's not on a remedy. She said, do you think she needs one? I said, yeah, absolutely, I do. Would you give her one? And I told the vet I was doing that. I didn't want to be dishonest with her. And she was okay with it. So she recommended a remedy, and I started giving it to her. But I knew there was something else I had to do. I couldn't just let her die, even though the vet had said she had terminal cancer. Okay, when you get a diagnosis like terminal cancer, what do? Usually you say, they're going to die. There's nothing I can do. Okay, I have no recourse here. It's done. It's a done deal. It happened to my uncle. My uncle was diagnosed with terminal cancer in 1993. And he got to the hospital. He wasn't feeling well. And the doctors kept going back and forth between pancreatitis and pancreatic cancer. They weren't really sure at that point what he had. And then he gets discharged from the hospital after having exploratory surgery, after being weakened, after being confused and scared. He goes to see his internist. So he goes into the internist's office. The internist had not seen him in the hospital. Internist looked at the chart, closed it, laid it on the desk, and said, you'll be dead in 6 months. When my uncle heard this, he lost his will to fight. Now, I know that pancreatic cancer is one of the most fatal forms of cancer. I think at the time, there was a 3% survival rate. I think it's up to about 6 now, survival for 5 years. But what that means is there are people who live. That's what the doctor didn't look at. The doctor didn't say to him, you know, I'll level with you. The chances of you're going to survive for a long term aren't the best. But some people live, and I'd like to see you be one of them. So let's see together how we can possibly bring that into being. It didn't happen. My uncle believed he was going to die, and the last 6 months of his life were preparing to die. He thought he had no recourse. So I remember that when Layla was diagnosed with terminal cancer. And something wonderful had happened to me the year before. It's not going to sound real wonderful to you, probably, but it turned out to be a blessing in disguise. As you know, if you listen to the show regularly, I had a catastrophic stroke. It was quite a stroke. It took out a lot of my brain function. I had it 13 months before Layla was diagnosed. So the stroke, what did the stroke do? It took out memory. It took out a lot of speech. It took out a lot of functioning in my life. Driving was difficult. Driving over bridges and through tunnels was extremely difficult. Still is. I'm still getting that back again. I couldn't cook. Being around fire terrified me. Everything that was normal in my life was suddenly destroyed because of the stroke. So one of the things that the stroke destroyed, which was actually turned out to be beneficial for me, it destroyed a lot of my belief systems. My life had been built by me upon the premise that I understood things. Well, thanks to the stroke, my brain didn't work the way it used to work. So my understanding of things wasn't what it used to be. I found that I had to feel my way from life, feel my way through life. I had a hard time logically coming up with ideas. I had a hard time solving problems. I had a hard time doing the things that we have to do in order to survive in the world. I learned to go into my heart. When the brain didn't work, I went into the heart. So everything I decided from then on in was either intuition or my heart would tell me yes or no. And it's a very different way of living. I'd always been an intelligent person. I was smart in school. I was a high honor graduate in the 27th best high school in the country in my year of high school graduation. Graduated from college, I was in an honor society. Smart person. I was on Jeopardy. Smart person. Well, the brains went away. Okay, the memory went away. The logic went away. The problem-solving abilities went away. I was left with a heart that was wide open and not a whole lot else happening for me. One of the things the stroke destroyed was my belief system. Most people would think the terminal cancer would mean somebody's going to die. What I said to myself was, not necessarily, because again, I had no logic working. Just because the vet had told me that she had terminal cancer, just because I saw the x-ray, it showed this enormous tumor wrapped around her spleen that at some point would explode her spleen and she would have a very quick and painful death. Okay, I was told all of this. But I didn't believe that she had to die because the stroke took out that necessary bit of information. So step one was, I didn't think she had to die. Step two was, what could I do to help her have the best possible quality of life for the time she had remaining? And at that point, I wasn't necessarily focused on her living as much as I was focused upon her enjoying her life as much as possible for whatever time that she had left. You know, if she had died, I wouldn't have been completely surprised by it. I would have partially been surprised by it. You know, I really didn't know which way it was going to go, and I wasn't invested in it going the way I wanted it to go. I just said, okay, how can I make her life the most joyful possible experience for her for whatever time that she has left? And I also knew that she had a choice about living or dying. This was not up to me. Maybe it was her time. She was 14 years old. She'd had a tough life with me. I got her when she was 4 years old. She'd been a rescue dog. I believe she'd been an abused dog. She had a lot of issues with being touched on one part of her body. She was very scared for the first years that she was with me. She did not like to mix with people very much. She did not like to leave the house. Once she found herself a nurturing home, she didn't want to leave it. So I had this dog, and maybe it was her time to go. Maybe my wanting her to live would not have been the respectful thing. We all have an expiration date. Maybe hers had come up. Didn't know that. But I knew that I had to do something to make her her last days, whatever they turned out to be, the best possible time of her life. And I decided to put together a program to do this. So the first couple of days, I was in shock, as most of us would be, like, okay, so my family is done. She was the last person I would call family, the last being I would call family. Now she's dying too. And I don't have a lot of friends right now, so what do I do with this? And the first thing I decided to do was document her last days. I wanted to have photos of her. When she first came into my life, I used to joke that she was in the witness protection program. She hated having her photograph taken, just hated it. And there wasn't a whole lot I could do about that. So I said, okay, she's probably going, according to the vet. Maybe she's not, but that's what the vet says. So let's get some photographs. And I called up somebody who had promised me previously that he would do anything for me. And I believed him. You know, I'd hope that was true. So I called him up and I said, I need to have photographs. Would you please take some photographs of the two of us? And he agreed to do that. So 4 days after her cancer was diagnosed, we met up in a park, in one of the state parks in New Jersey, and started taking photographs. These are the photographs that you see on the show banner for Catalytic. These are the photographs that you see on my website, transformingthroughlove.com. These are the photographs you see whenever there's something associated with me these days. He took those photographs. He did a great job, by the way. Beautiful photographs. So we met up in this park, and he had his digital camera, and he started snapping away, and was doing a nice job. And then the phone rang, and it was somebody who wanted to talk to him, and it wasn't a crisis situation. It wasn't anything that was anything that was an emergency. It was just somebody who wanted to talk to him. So he took the call and he stayed on the phone for about 45 minutes while he's working with me. And I'm really annoyed. I mean, I feel disrespected. It felt extremely rude for 45 minutes. I mean, come on. And what I really wanted to do, it was a friend. I needed to have the support of a friend right then. He was taking his attention away from me and Layla in order to talk to this person we could have talked to anytime. And I was angry. And it was great that I got angry. I'm a big believer in what I call righteous rage. You know what I'm talking about? When you're disrespected and every cell of your body vibrates with the knowledge that you deserve so much better. Well, that's where I was in that moment. And I couldn't say anything to him because he was doing me a favor by taking the photographs. I mean, I wanted to rip his head off at that point, but couldn't really do it. So instead, I kind of withdrew a little bit, didn't want to interact with him. And just look to do what I could do to be as calm and peaceful as possible. I knew that my energy was going to affect Layla. So if I stayed calm and if I stayed neutral, she would be feeling better. And a woman was walking her dog, and she looked at me, and I was dressed up. Usually dog walkers don't dress up for the occasion, but this was going to be the last photo shoot, so I thought. So I put on my beautiful red dress. I love this dress. It's one of my favorite dresses. And I had boots on. I looked pretty good. Makeup, the hair was doing, you know, it was a nice session. So she looked at me and she said, I love your dress. And I said, thank you. My friend picked this up for me in a nudist colony many years ago. Did you know that you could get great clothes in nudist colonies? And she laughed. And I remember thinking, again, I'd had the stroke, so I wasn't a thinking organism as well as a feeling organism. But in that moment, a thought came through. And here was the thought. This feels good. Somebody's paying attention to me. I want more of this. So she went away, and other people saw my dog. And my dog, it was just a gorgeous dog. She was stunningly beautiful. We think she was part Elkhound, part Husky, and part Shepherd. That was what the vet thought. I have no idea what she was, but she was drop-dead gorgeous. So people would, you know, oftentimes come up to me and say, your dog is really beautiful. What is she? And I would give them the usual answer. I don't know, take a guess, because that was all I knew. So people would say, she's really beautiful. Well, I started saying to people, in the park that day, she has terminal cancer. Would you pray for her? And people said, oh, yes, of course I will. And I'm thinking, this is interesting. I'd gotten used to not getting help. My mother had died in 2011 of dementia. And I don't know if you've ever cared for a dementia patient or you know people who cared for dementia patients. I don't like to generalize, but on this point, I will generalize. You can pretty much count on most of your friends leaving your life if you're caring for somebody with dementia. They don't want to be around you. There are many reasons for that. Your mood is not always what they want to experience. You're going to be tired. You're not going to really want to listen a lot of the time. You're going to be worried about money. You're going to be stressed out because your dementia patient's moods are changing and you may not feel physically safe when you're with them. I had that with my mom. So I'd lost a lot of friends, but there were times I had to ask for help. And I thought I would get it. So one time when I was caring for my mom, I was going to get a side business going. And I asked three people I had known, three people who were videographers, if they would consider making a video for me that I could put on YouTube to publicize my work. Two of them never got back to me, and the third one said to me, "Can't you find somebody else? Why do you have to ask me?" And I'm thinking, wow, that's really, So I didn't contact them for that job again. And I would, you know, when my mother died, and I had a lot of other deaths within a short period of time, I would ask people to spend time with me. And instead of them doing that, I said, look, I'm really burned out. My mother was sick for a long time, and she got all my energy. She got all my love, and I really need to be replenished. And this is when, you know, I really need my friends. Would you be there for me? And most people vanished from my life at that point. They didn't want any part of it. Didn't understand that. And I'm thinking, well, I think I've been the best possible friend I could be to these people. And maybe I was wrong about the fact that we really cared about each other. Maybe that wasn't there after all. And then it came down to at one point when I'd had the stroke, and I'd asked a friend to help me by driving me across a bridge. I was having a lot of trouble driving across bridges. And I just wanted to be a passenger in his car just to see if I could be a passenger. And he said to me, "Isn't there somebody else you can ask?" I'm thinking to myself, wow, this is a person who a month earlier had said, "I'll do anything for you." What is it about me that's causing all these people to not want to help? So when I had to ask people to pray for Layla, you can imagine this was very scary for me. This was a leap of faith because I was used to people not doing this. And I knew I couldn't pull this off on my own. If she was going to have a pleasant last number of days, weeks, whatever, I needed help to make this happen. I needed to ask for prayer. And I was really afraid. So many people hadn't done things for me when I'd asked them to do them. So I'm in this park with a bunch of strangers, and the person I was with was on the phone. And I started asking people, "Would you pray for my dog?" And eventually somebody came up, and he'd had his dog with him, and I told him about Layla's cancer. And he said, "Oh, that's awful. I know how it is when you lose a dog. It's horrible. And of course I'll pray. And what's her name?" And we got into this great conversation about how precious it is to have the love of a dog in your life. He told me about dogs he had had who had passed. I told him about my other dog who had passed. And we had this really great heart connection. The photographer listened to this conversation. He'd never had a dog. So this was very foreign to him. And he listened to us talk about how wonderful it is to have a dog. And after that person went away, the photographer opened up to me. We had this really great heartfelt conversation, which made me happy because this was somebody I wanted to get to know. This was somebody who I really cared about. And he opened up his heart and we talked about things that were important to him, things that were important to me. He saw the love that I have for my dog. And he saw the way that man talked about his dogs, and it touched his heart. You know, when we speak from our hearts, it's amazing what can happen. Even people who don't necessarily want to speak from their hearts will get that it's okay to do it. And that's what happened with him. So we had this really wonderful, heartfelt conversation. I was sorry when he left. It was just a beautiful day. He said, "You know, I don't have anywhere to go. Do you want to hang out?" And I said, "Yeah, that would be great." Layla liked him. You know, when a dog likes you, they'll usually do something like sit on your foot. And she sat on his foot, and I knew at that point she'd given him her approval. So we stayed until the sun began to set, and then we knew it was time to leave the park. Well, at that point, my work was cut out for me. I needed to ask for prayer. So that was part one of my protocol, getting people to pray for Layla and getting her to be blessed. So what did I do? I live about a half an hour from a town on the Jersey Shore that's a religious community. In the summer especially, people come from all over North America, and they tent. The town is called Ocean Grove, New Jersey. You may not have heard of it if you're not from New Jersey. It's the most delightful Victorian town. It was begun in 1869. There was a Methodist community that would meet every summer. They would have camp meetings, and they built this enormous church called the Great Auditorium. People would come from all over the place to worship at the Great Auditorium, and they would live in tents for the summer. Well, eventually, these tents became what's called tent homes. It is a wooden structure that houses a bathroom and a kitchen. And then there's a framework over which a canvas tent is erected every spring. And people live in these tent homes until the weather gets cool. So people were just starting to come into Ocean Grove for the summer season, which was beautiful for me. So I knew these people prayed, and I would walk up to these people and I would say, "Do you pray?" They're total strangers. And again, I was used to being rejected, so this was difficult to have the courage to go do this, but my dog deserved this. So I would bring her into Ocean Grove. She was tired, she was in pain, but I would bring her for short excursions every day. I'd walk up to strangers and say, "Do you pray?" And they would say, "Yes." And I said, "Would you pray for my dog? She was diagnosed with terminal cancer, and I believe prayers can make a difference. Would you help by praying?" Nobody ever turned me down. I probably asked over 1,000 people over the course of the summer to pray for her. Nobody ever turned me down. And it was wonderful because many of the people really showed an interest in her, really beyond, my just asking for prayers. "What's her name? What's her story? This is really wonderful that you're asking for prayers. I'm so happy to be a part of your process." At that point in the town, there was a coffee shop, and it was called the Barbaric Bean. And there was a sign in the town, in the coffee shop, that said, "We would love to pray with you. Just ask." So I said, "Okay." Couldn't take her into the coffee shop, but I went in and I asked for the owner, Joe. And Joe came out and I said, "My dog was diagnosed with terminal cancer. Would you pray for her?" He says, "Of course." So he took me into the back room and he took my hand and he said prayers for her. And he said, "Let me know how she's doing. I really want to know. What's your name?" And I told him, "I'm Cheryl." He says, "Okay, I'm Joe. It's a pleasure to meet you. And let me know how she does." Coffee shop's no longer there. There was a big fire in Ocean Grove last year, and six businesses were destroyed. His was one of them. So he chose not to rebuild his business. But it's interesting because a lot of people in Ocean Grove were economically devastated. And he came out of this, from what I understand, pretty much okay, even though he lost his business. Insurance covered a lot of what he had lost. So I believe prayer saved him as well. And he said as much on Facebook. Really, really wonderful person. One of the truly beautiful meetings I had in Ocean Grove, Layla wasn't sleeping well. She had a lot of pain and her breathing wasn't good. So she wasn't sleeping more than a couple of hours a night, which means I wasn't sleeping more than a couple hours a night. So I got used to loading her into the car at 6 o'clock in the morning and taking her to Ocean Grove for sunrise. And one morning we walked down Main Avenue, which is the main street of Ocean Grove. And I saw a woman who was dressed quite dressed up. I was surprised. She was wearing a nice hat with flowers, and she had a pretty dress on, a summer dress, and she looked like she was going to church or to go somewhere special. And I walked up to her, 7 o'clock in the morning, didn't know her. "You pray?" "Yes, I pray." "Would you pray for my dog?" She says, "I would love to pray for your dog." Well, there was another woman who was sweeping the street at that point, and she called her over. She says, "Luann, would you come help us pray?" And Linda was the woman who was going to pray for us. So Linda took my hand, it took Luann's hand, and I was holding Layla's leash. And Linda started praying over Layla, and she started praying in tongues. I don't know about praying in tongues. It's not my religious tradition, but I knew she was in her heart. I could feel it. And she really wanted to help Layla. That was so obvious. And she starts praying, and Luann starts praying, and I'm so grateful that I've met these people who are taking time out from their day to help my dog, who'd never met before. And after it was done, she looked at me. Linda looked at me and said, "She's going to be fine." And I knew she was going to be fine. Well, she told me her address. She said, "Please come visit me." And I had no idea where she lived. At that point, I did not know many of the streets in Ocean Grove, but she gave me her address and she says, "Come visit me. I'd love to see you again." And I says, "We will." Well, the next day, Layla and I go to Ocean Grove. And she leads me to Linda's house. Didn't know she learned how to read street signs, but apparently she knew something. She knew where Linda lived. Didn't see Linda. Something said, "Don't knock on the door." The day after that, again, Layla leads me back to Linda's house. Again, she knew where Linda lived. Again, something said, "Don't knock on the door." Third day in a row, go back to Ocean Grove. Layla leads me back to Linda's house. Again, I was directed, "Don't knock on the door." Fourth day, there's Linda. Linda looks at me and says, "What a pretty dog." And I said, "Do you remember us? We were on Main Avenue at 7 o'clock in the morning a few days ago. And I asked you to pray for my dog. My dog had cancer. And you prayed for her. This is Layla." And she says, "Oh my God, of course I remember who you are. Thank you for coming to see me." But it wasn't my idea. It was all Layla's doing. She led me to your house for the last 3 days, and here you are. She said, The afternoon after I prayed for Layla, I collapsed on the street and I was taken to the hospital in an ambulance. My medication needed to be adjusted, and I just got out of the hospital this morning. Well, what do you think happened? Did Layla know that her friend was in trouble? I think she did. You know, if you like logic, perhaps you think it was just coincidence. I don't think there was a lot of coincidence in this. So we started visiting Linda occasionally. We would see her walking through Ocean Grove, and she would always say, "There's that beautiful dog again." It was really a blessed connection, and she really, I know she made a difference because just a few hours after the prayer session, I saw an improvement of Layla. She had more energy. Her breathing had improved. She seemed happier. She seemed healthier. And that probably was the moment when I thought we might have a chance that she was going to survive this. Now, while I was asking for all these people to pray for me on the street, walking wherever I was walking, I was also at home going on as many prayer lists as I could find, putting Layla's name on prayer lists. And because I was working so hard, you know how energy travels, people started finding me, strangers from the internet started finding me and saying, "I want to pray." This woman in India, I swear I'm not making this up, this woman in India found me on LinkedIn, of all places, and said, "We have a prayer group, and if you need me to pray for anything, let me know." Now, I hadn't posted on LinkedIn about Layla. That's a business site, right? You're not supposed to post this kind of stuff on LinkedIn. She was directed to contact me, and she says, "We're now having a prayer every day directed at one person." And I said to her, "My dog was diagnosed with terminal cancer. I would love if you would pray for my dog." And she said, "It would be my honor. We'll all pray for her together." Again, a woman from India. I'm in New Jersey, and she's in India, and she's praying for my dog. It was just gorgeous watching all these people come together. My friends in various parts of the world also said they would pray for her. It was just phenomenal. I felt so cared about and so supported. And again, not one person turned me down. I was used to being turned down when my mother was ill, after she passed, when I was going through all the deaths, when my friends were leaving my life, when I was going through all of this. And all of a sudden, I got to experience this is what it feels like to feel loved and supported. Well, I had known that I had the stroke in 2012, big stroke, because I didn't feel loved and supported. I'd gone through four deaths of people who were very significant in my life within 6 months. I recovered memories of being sexually abused by one of my favorite relatives during that time. And my boyfriend had dumped me. The one who had promised, "I'm going to be there for you this whole time. You can depend on me. I don't say things I don't mean." He just vanished from my life. Didn't want anything more to do with me, just occasionally. So I was used to people not being there for me. All of a sudden, I had love and support around me. Yes, it was directed at Layla, but people also said, "We'll pray for you," especially when I mentioned I'd had a stroke the year before. And they said, "Oh my God, of course we'll pray for you." So I'm getting prayed for, and Layla's getting prayed for. So a month after she was diagnosed with terminal cancer, and according to the vet's idea, which at that time looked pretty good, she only had 6 more weeks to live. I take Layla to the vet's office for an examination, and she prances in the front door. The vet tech starts to cry. She knew she was going to be well, and she says, "We just don't see this." He said, "What did you do?" And I said, "Well, I put together a program. I made sure that she got big doses every day of love, fun, prayer, and blessings, and important work to do." She says, "Whatever it is that you did, I can't believe this." And she just started crying. So I took her in to see the vet. Vet was finally free to see her. So we took her into the vet's office, and the vet's eyes open up wide and says, "This is a miracle." And it was a miracle. Now, one of the quotes that I love, and I have this out to share with you tonight. You may have heard this. This is from St. Augustine. "Miracles aren't contrary to nature. They're only contrary to what we know about nature. So yes, we can do things. Do I think that my protocol saved your life? I don't know. I think so, but I don't know. Do I think that the vet's protocol saved your life? I don't know. I think so, but I don't know. Do I think that my friend the homeopath's remedy saved Layla's life? I don't know. I think so." How much do we really know? You know, when you examine your ideas about why things are the way that they are, how much is true? Gene Siskel, and I've done this with my radio guests. Gene Siskel used to ask all of his guests, remember Gene Siskel, the theater critic? He had the show with Siskel and Ebert. And he would ask every guest on his show at the end, "What do you know for sure?" What a brilliant question that is. What do you know for sure? And the guest would say something, and usually it was a pretty good answer. I had a student many years ago. I taught integrated energy therapy. I was a master instructor. I guess I still am, even though I'm not doing anything with it these days. So I had a young student, and she was in her teens. And I asked her, "What do you know for sure?" And she told me a whole bunch of things. And I'm thinking to myself, "Yep, you're young." So a couple years later, she came back, and I said, "Hey, what do you know for sure?" And she says, "Not that much anymore." And I said, "Yeah, you're getting it now. So what do we know for sure? We don't know much for sure. I do believe, I feel in my heart, that the protocol I put together for Layla did help save her life. Can't prove it, but I believe it did happen." So we had all these people who I asked to pray for Layla. And even though the vet felt her abdomen, again, this is a month after the diagnosis, it's 2 weeks before she was supposed to die, right? The vet felt her abdomen. She says, "I don't feel the tumor." I said, "I'm not surprised." She said, "It's good." She says, "You know, bring her back. We'll do an x-ray next time." Well, it got interesting because I brought her back 3 times for x-rays. And each time I brought her back, the x-ray didn't happen. One time, the x-ray machine was broken. The next time I brought her back, it was working, but there wasn't enough developer fluid. And then the third time I brought her back, I made an appointment to bring her for an x-ray, and there was a temporary person working as the vet tech, and she made the appointment, put it in the book. So I brought Layla in for her x-ray, and the vet tech says, "What are you doing here?" With a regular vet tech, and I got an appointment. Layla was supposed to have an x-ray. She says, "Not according to the book. She's not scheduled today." And I looked at her, and I said, "You know, Nancy, this is the third time I've tried to get an x-ray on my dog. First time, the x-ray machine was broken. Second time, there wasn't enough developer fluid. And this time, it's not in your book. I don't think she needs an x-ray, do you?" And she says, "You know, if it were my dog, I wouldn't do it." I said, "Yeah, that was my thinking." So we never had that last x-ray to confirm that the cancer was gone. But I believe it was. This past year, I took her in to see the vet when she was having some problems. This was toward the end of her life. And I walked into the vet's office, and I said, "Layla is not comfortable now. She's having digestive upsets." First thing the vet said to me was, "Well, the tumor's pressing against her stomach." And I looked at the vet, and I said, "I don't believe she has cancer. I just knew she didn't have cancer." And the vet looked at me and said, "Let's do some blood work." So she took blood from Layla, ran it, and she said, "No, she doesn't have cancer." So Layla did not die of cancer. She had terminal cancer of the liver, of the spleen, right? Possibly the kidneys as well. The vet had told me that, possibly of the kidneys. She had, it was a huge tumor. I mean, if you saw the x-ray, you would say, it's impossible that she could survive that. But she didn't die of cancer. Now, what happened as we were going through this magical period, it was a truly magical time of my life. The last 2 years of Layla's life, you can't make this stuff up. I lived in a bubble of love. Everywhere I went, there were people wanting to love me, wanting to support me, wanting to love Layla, wanting to support Layla. And it was just the most beautiful thing. People would see us in Ocean Grove months after I'd asked for prayers. And they would say, "How's she doing?" I said, "She's good. Take a look." And they said, "How old is she now?" And I would say, "She's 15, she's 16, whatever she was." And people would say, "God bless you." I said, "Yeah, pretty cool, isn't it?" People would cry. Or I'd still walk up to strangers. But this time I would walk up to strangers, not asking for prayers, but I would tell the story. I would tell the story so they would know, in case anybody they knew ever got a scary diagnosis, they would have heard that it is possible to live despite the diagnosis. So I'd walk up to people in Ocean Grove, and then I started going to a different place to walk in another town a little bit farther down the shore called Spring Lake. Beautiful, beautiful town. And they've got this enormous lake called Divine Lake. It's not a bad place to go if you want miracles, right? You go to Divine Lake. So I'd walk her around Divine Lake. We'd meet people, and I would say, "Do you have a minute? I would like to tell you a great story." And I would tell Layla's story to people. And people would burst out crying. "I really needed to meet you today. Thank you so much for telling me this. My sister-in-law or my father or whatever was just diagnosed with cancer. I need to know that it's possible." And I says, "I can't make you any guarantees. I can't do that for you, but I can give you hope, and I want to do that." So Layla, in the last 2 years of her life, became an ambassador for what is possible. She became a role model. She became something to look up to. And people would look at her continuing to live And they would say, that can't be possible. Now, I've told the story before on Catalytic, and I apologize for telling it again. It's such a great story. I have to share it again right now. One of my neighbors, who had lost a number of dogs to cancer, saw Layla and me walking together last winter. We just had a snowstorm, similar to Jonas. It was a big snow. There was a lot of snow on the ground. And she's driving her car, and she looks at me, and she says, is that Layla? I said, yeah. Well, she had cancer. Yeah, she had cancer, doesn't have it anymore. Well, that's not possible, because she had terminal cancer. I remember you telling me about that. Well, yeah, she did, and it went away, and she's going to be 16 next month. And she's like, how did you do this? And I said, I believe it was possible. And she says, that's wonderful. Bless you. Well, as it turns out, she herself developed lung cancer. It was advanced lung cancer. She had it this past summer. I haven't seen her in a while. She's still around. I see her car. She went through chemo. She went through radiation. I think she had surgery as well. And I went over to her when I heard that she had cancer, and I offered to show her what I did with Layla, to help her find a way through this, to support her. Not that this was going to heal her. It wasn't going to heal her. But so she would feel stronger, so she would feel empowered. So she would feel there was something else that she could do besides panic and cry. And she said something really interesting to me. She said, my father had a doctorate in mathematics, and I was raised to believe that everything in life has to be logical. What you're telling me isn't logical, so therefore I don't believe it happened. Now, she had seen Layla for 2 years after the cancer was diagnosed. She knew Layla had lived, and she couldn't believe that Layla could live, even though she saw it. It didn't make sense to her. It was like a mirage. It was like I'd done a magician's trick. So I didn't share anything with her. That wasn't respectful, and that was the end of that. But she's still around, so I'm really happy that whatever it is that she's doing, she's still around. She's a wonderful person. I'm glad that she was able to do that. So the last 2 years of Layla's life were quite magical. And then about 7 months before she died, excuse me, I noticed that she was collapsing. And I knew she wasn't sick. You know, at that point, I was so tuned into my dog, I knew when she was sick and when she wasn't sick. And I had learned that whenever it looked like she was sick, if I changed something in my life, she wouldn't be sick anymore. You know, animals will pick up our energy. If we're depressed, they'll develop symptoms many times. If we're stressed, they'll develop symptoms. If we have illness, they'll take it away from us. You know, I've seen this over and over with my animals and with other people's animals. But Layla was collapsing, and I didn't know what I could do about this. I knew I had to do something, and I knew I didn't have to take her to the vet. I knew I had to change something in my life. So this was in the fall of 2014. I asked for a sign. Easy enough to do, right? I asked for a sign. And I'm out driving around, and I go past a church, and on the church, there's a sign that says, seek God. I'm thinking, well, my sign is an actual sign. That's pretty cool. And seek God sounds like a good plan. So what I did was this. I sent an email to everybody I knew, and I said, Layla's been sick. I need to do something to change this. I know it's within me to make this go away. So I saw this sign outside of church that said, seek God. I'm not going to be in touch with you for a while. I'm just cutting off from everybody in the world as much as I can, and I'm going to seek God and see what it is I need to learn. Have a good Thanksgiving. Bye. And people didn't really understand what I was doing, or they didn't want to understand whatever it was. So there were a few people who emailed me back and said, that's wonderful. I wish you all the best. And I appreciated that. They dropped out of touch with me. And then there were those who didn't think I meant them. I was pretty clear about I meant everybody. One of them texted me and wanted to tell me something about her own health, which wasn't relevant in that moment. It wasn't a bad thing. Just wanted to update me on something, and it wasn't relevant. And I just said, okay, that's not a friend. Friends would honor what I'm saying. Friends would go away. If I needed to have my time to myself, they would go away. And another one had said, you know, I miss you when you're gone. I don't want you out of my life. And again, I needed to seek God. This isn't what I need in this moment. If you respect me, if you love me, you'll give me this time to do what I know I have to do. Well, something interesting happened. When I cut off from everybody in my life, guess what? Layla stopped collapsing. Layla started eating. I got a healthy dog again. And I started looking really carefully at my relationships, my friendships. How many of them were really good for me? How many were draining me of my energy? How many were really showing me what felt like love? So I realized that by seeking God, I was walking away from anything that did not feel like love in that moment. These people may have loved me in the past, may have loved me in that moment, but didn't feel like love to me. They weren't respecting me. They weren't listening to me. They didn't want to listen to me. They wanted what they wanted. So Layla stopped collapsing. She started eating. She put back weight. And I had 7 more months with her. And that's when I got to see, walk away from anything that is not love, because it affects more people than just ourselves. If we have somebody in our life that we want to keep a relationship with, I think we've got 3 choices. Choice number one is work on the relationship with them. See if there's a way to transform this into something that feels good. If you've been holding back from telling them your truth about things, tell them your truth in a loving way, not an accusing way, but just saying, I really love you, and I want this to work with us. And can we possibly get closer? I really miss our closeness. Can we make this happen? And sometimes 2 people who want the same thing, 2 people who are willing to have the same outcome, they can get something happening that feels like love for both of them. That's the ideal resolution to that issue. Resolution number 2 is find a way to accept the fact that this isn't going to be what you want it to be and use it as a learning experience. Well, I did that with a lot of people for a lot of years, and I'm at the point now where I don't do that anymore, but I can see where it would be useful when you're still in that growing phase to see, okay, I've experienced this that doesn't feel like love, and I've learned a lot from it, and now I can go out and ask for something else and stand for something else. So that's choice number 2. Then you've got choice number 3, which is leave the relationship. So I left most of those relationships, and I had 7 more months with Layla. She didn't die of cancer. And until the last few weeks of her life, I would call her a very healthy dog. Got to a point we couldn't do it anymore. And that was that. Now, after she passed away, I didn't want to leave that bubble of love I'd lived in for 2 years. And it was important for me to thank people who prayed for her. Now, I know I couldn't thank everybody. I mean, at that point, there were thousands of people around the world who had prayed for her. I couldn't possibly find them. I didn't know their names. I didn't know where they lived. So I decided to give little bags of hearts. I started going into craft stores right after she passed away, and I would collect heart-shaped beads, all different shapes and sizes. Usually they turn out to be about the same colors. They were copper color or silver or clear or white or something like that. There wasn't a lot of variety in color, but they seemed to sort out into 2 different color palettes. One was coppers and one was whites and clears. So I got little tiny organza bags like you would use for a wedding, right? And I would put 10 hearts in each of these bags. 10 represented to me a prayer group. So it would be a prayer group of hearts. And I would give these to people who prayed for her. But pretty soon, I expanded that. I gave it to people who had loving hearts. Thank you for having a loving heart. I want to give you a bunch of hearts to thank you for all the good you do in the world. Or thank you for having me tell Layla's story. Thank you for putting me on your radio show. Or thank you for supporting Layla by letting us spend time with you, whatever it was. Lately, the hearts have been going to people who are grieving. And I know what it feels like to not have support when I was grieving. And I want to have people feel supported. One woman I gave a bag of hearts to took my idea. She had just lost her brother a few days before. And she says, I love this idea. I'm going to make bags of hearts and give them out at the funeral home. For everybody who comes to see my brother in visitation, I'm going to give them a bag of hearts. So if this feels good to you, go with it. Do the same thing. It's a very powerful thing. Because I'm an angelic healing master, I'm double certified in angelic healing master, there's energy in these hearts. And many people who have felt the hearts have said to me, these feel beautiful to me, these feel so loving. Well, yeah, I infuse them with the angelic energy. So you don't have to be attuned to anything. You can just send love into them. You can just hold them in your hand and send love in, and people will feel what you have done. It's quite lovely. So that is what we did in terms of asking for help to get Layla well. I'm not going to go into all the phases of what we did, the fun, the service, and the love. But I will say that these are things I can teach you if you want. I coach. You can go to my website, transformingthroughlove.com, and together we can work out something to give you a better quality of life or to give those in your life a better quality of life. Maybe they've gotten a scary diagnosis. Maybe they just feel disconnected from their soul, whatever it is. We can work together to develop this protocol that's just right for your needs. So transformingthroughlove.com. Contact me through the contact page. We'll talk. I'm also just, I just launched today. I'm so happy I was able to launch this before the show tonight. I mentioned this during the last show, but I'm doing a 22-day stay-at-home sabbatical during the month of February, and I'm doing it through Eventbrite. It's called 22 Adventures in Refreshing Your Life, the stay-at-home sabbatical. So what we're going to do is we're going to implement a lot of the ideas that I just talked about, how to find happiness, how to find peace, how to find service, how to feel like you're making a difference. Little stories, little exercise, little things to do to connect you with all the love that there is in the world. I posted this on my website. So if you go to transformingthroughlove.com and click on the events page, you will see a notice of this event. 22 days, half an hour a day. If you can't join us live, you can check us during, you know, there's archives up. It'll be Instant Teleseminar is how we're going to do it. So, you know, Instant Teleseminar, you've probably taken classes with them. It's a service that you can either listen on the phone live, or you can go on your computer after the recording is done and listen whenever you like. So you'll have access to these recordings always. The class is going to cost $133.33, which is pretty cool because I had my my broken heart syndrome, my cardiomyopathy on March the 3rd while I was driving down Route 33. So it's nice that the numbers worked out that way. Truly, I didn't plan that. I wanted to charge $97 for the class, and Eventbrite's fee makes it $103.33. So, hey, there you go. But I hope you will join us. We're going to have a great time. And I'm going to give you right now one of the homework assignments that I'm going to assign in the class, and I'm going to tell you the story that goes with this. It's pretty cool. So fun is one of the things I focused on to help Layla get well and to help myself get well. One day I had the idea of giving out little bottles of bubbles. You never outgrow your need for bubbles. I mean, please, they're bubbles. So I went to the dollar store. And if you go into the wedding section of the dollar store, you can buy 8 bottles of bubbles for a dollar. So I bought a bunch of bubbles and I started handing them out to people. And you have to do this with attitude. You got to really sell this. So it's not like, well, yeah, here's a bottle of bubbles, have fun. You know, you start walking up to people and saying, you need some bubbles today, and I knew you did, and here they are. You just really want to get in there with full energy and full passion, and just you go for it. So I did this, and it was really fun to do this because people were like, for me? Oh, wow, what do I have to pay you for? No, it's a gift. Well, what's the purpose? So you can have some fun. Oh, really? It's fun watching people's reactions. That was as much fun for me as anything else. Well, the best story that went that day, I'm with Layla in Ocean Grove. And I'm walking down the street looking for people I can give bubbles to. And there was this incredibly hot guy who's the maitre d' of one of the sidewalk cafes. I mean, he is freaking hot. And it's one of those guys who's so gorgeous, you don't know what to say. I'm figuring, I'm in a good mood. Let's do this. So I walk up to the maitre d', and I do the girl thing. I flip my hair, and I wet my lips, and I said to him, you look like a man who could use some bubbles. And he said to me, you have no idea how right you are, sweetheart. I'm like, huh? So he reaches behind his maitre d' podium, and he pulls out a propeller beanie. Do you remember propeller beanies back in the day? He had a propeller beanie, garish thing, 6 different colors in the beanie with the propeller on the top. I freaking lost it, couldn't stop laughing. I was collapsed on the ground with laughter. I'm not exaggerating it. And he knew he'd gotten my attention. And he said, you know, it's serendipity that we met today, isn't it? And I said, yes, it is. And then he spun the propeller for me, and I collapsed again. I couldn't, it was just too freaking funny. This gorgeous man, he could have been an underwear model. It was that kind of gorgeous. Muscles out to here with a propeller beanie, which is he spinning for me. So I'm walking around town, and I keep running into him, and he's spinning his propeller one more time for me, and I'd start laughing again. Well, the last time we walked around town, he was, I guess, done with his shift at the restaurant, and I saw him walking home, still wearing the propeller beanie, carrying his bottle of bubbles. It was a beautiful thing. I want you to have this experience. So even though it's winter, I want you to go to the dollar store, spend a dollar, buy 8 bubble bottles. They're tiny. They're maybe 2 inches tall. They're very, very small. And give them out to people. They're shoveling snow for you. It happened to me. My neighbor shoveled me out. If they shovel snow for you, say, I want you to have a bottle of bubbles just because. Maybe you know somebody who has a dog. You ever see dogs play with bubbles? They just think these are the most amazing things ever. So you know, play with their dogs, whatever. But these are things you can do, easy things. This is one of the homework assignments that you'll get in 22 Adventures in Refreshing Your Life. So please visit transformingthroughlove.com. Click on the events button. You'll see everything you need to do to register, and I hope we'll see you there. I am so happy that you chose to be with us tonight. I hope you've learned some things. It's been fun for me to spend this time with you, and I hope you've enjoyed it as well. Please let me know about your own love miracles. This is the stuff I live for. I want to know about your love miracles. You can email me at transformingthroughlove.com. I am your host, Cheryl Hirsch-Kramer, inviting you to join us again in 2 weeks. We're going to talk about love just before Valentine's Day. We're going to talk about what makes relationships tick, and we're going to do it through the view of destiny cards, which maybe you know about, and if you don't, you're going to learn about it in 2 weeks. So I wish you a marvelous 2 weeks. I wish you all the things you want to have in your life. I wish you miracles. I wish you healing. I wish you much, much love. And I'm going to leave you with a quote by Dr. Wayne Dyer. No matter how long the road, love is the walk power. Many blessings. Good night.